Bonjour. Je m'excuse, mais mon français est un petit peu. So I will have to speak in English. English is not my first language either, so I hope you don't see this as bringing English dominance in the room. My first language is Dutch. So it's a great honor to be here. And I thank the organization for inviting me, and in particular, Professor Siliana Lachey and Abdelali for having assisted me to be here this morning. So it's the talk is about everyday racism and in higher education and culture cloning. So the first part will focus mostly on everyday racism, and then I will continue to say more about culture cloning and how the two relate. What my talk will be about is, first I will look at the question, what is everyday racism? Then I will look at everyday racism in a university context. Then I will say something about a model I developed called Triangle of Domination, and then about racism in as embedded and how it adapts to the university culture, and then about cultural cloning. So,
I think we want to see the first.
The first one.
Well, lucky you, it's all in French. Everyday racism is about the creation of hierarchies of worthiness attached to groups of people. And I use the hierarchy of worthiness, which is different than in many other definitions of racism, which, of course, racism has also to do with power, with process, with ideology. But at the end of the day, every form of structural discrimination and structural marginalization is about creating hierarchies of worthiness. So it's a hierarching human beings as one type having more worth to live and to have a life and to deserve humane and dignified living conditions than another. And whether that is according to race, according to gender, according to ethnicity, according to, of course, race is not a real thing, but we don't have to talk about that. And it's very closely related to ethnicity. Whether it is about disability or sexual orientation, it is creating those hierarchies. So in a way, I have a very general definition, which can be adapted to different forms of domination. And the reason I move there has to do with the need I see to firmly address racism, but at the same time to be aware that it is always related to other forms of domination, and that it is never in isolation, which is why I developed a different definition. And can next slide, yes. So everyday racism is a process of numerous day-to-day violations of the human rights of ethnic minorities to live in dignity. It is expressed in and outside of institutions, in schools and at work, through media, shopping, neighborhood, etc. So it is always it's always the potential is there, and you never know when to expect it as the one who is the target. But it adapts to the condition in which you are, to what is at stake in a particular situation. You can do the next slide. Everyday racism, I have given a lot of samples how it can function in education. So in the educational context, it can be it can include, but is not limited to everyday put downs, to doubting your competence because you are a student of color, or appointing a white male who does not have a PhD as a full professor in the area of ethnic educations. There are examples of this in the Netherlands. Of silence about racism, about the horrors of colonization. So not addressing something is also a way of action, the action to not do something. To have teachers and professors who do not identify with you. As a teacher, one knows the phenomenon that you see a student and say, oh, that looks like my cousin, or oh, that looks like my neighbor, or that looks like, and then somebody who is like you. The same way is also the other way around, that a student can identify sometimes more quickly with somebody who they think looks like them. And what I'm definitely not saying is that you have to look like the teacher or the teacher has to look like the student in order to have a successful relation. I'm not saying that. I'm saying in the kind of society where we live, if it is one-sidedly that you only have a particular type of teacher, then the student does not have the variety also to identify with different types, and the other way around. Not being seen as the promising student. Once again, if you look at research that who are the professors who pick out the one they think, ah, there's the talent, I want to have that student do that PhD with me, or I want to work with that student. Very often, not exclusively, but more often than not, somebody who is in their idea of image. I recognize myself at that age. So those are the kind of hidden ways in which racism, but also other forms of discrimination work. Few or any professors of color, so the idea of who is smart, who is very intelligent, who becomes a full professor, remains to be the image of a white image, and very often a white male image. Feeling silence when students or teachers or professors make racist comments, or even use the N-word, and nobody addresses that. That becomes a way of making the environment one that is unsafe for students of color in particular, but unsafe actually for any student, because you are exposed to discourses of racism. So we go to the next slide. So this is a shortcut to more work I have done, but basically, I developed this triangle because on the basis of many, many interviews and lots of data about how everyday racism, the kind of examples that I just discussed in the list, are three main forms. It's marginalization, or often called exclusion. Then you need to have a reason, right, why you marginalize. So you problematize the other group. So their culture is not adept to a culture of learning, or they come in with, they are less intelligent, or they come in with a criminal background. I mean, all the kind of legitimations which do not necessarily point explicitly to race or ethnicity or color, but indirectly work to problematize a group. They don't look like us, they are not French enough, they are not Dutch enough, they are not German enough. They are a problem. They need to be fixed. And if you think somebody needs to be fixed, how willing will you be to be the fixer? And one of the most vicious forms of racism I paid less attention to in my earlier work, but more attention to now, has to do with repression. And repression works, can be very violent. You can kill people, you genocide. But if we know those forms of repression. But repression can also be through psychologically. If you humiliate people, if you tell them often enough that they're not that smart, or that they, you know, that they're not yet it, or never pay attention to their values, to what they do have, it means that you slowly humiliate a person or as a member of a group bit by bit. And there can be a time where they start to believe, yes, I don't deserve this attention because I'm not good anyway. We know that a lot in gender studies. We know that also a lot in race study or in disability studies. And then you become the own monitor of your own oppression, and you don't resist. Now, the good news is that sooner or later, the group will resist. So there is no oppression that goes on eternally. But then, because systems of dominance function also through repression, there is something at stake to continue to humiliate the other. And so, and if you don't resist yourself, who's going to do it for you? So that is the vicious part of the repression. Everyday racism is in academia is means trying not to get crushed under the weight of white normativity, which is the preference for whiteness and Europeanness, or in this situation here, Frenchness. White European normativity can be in curriculum, in classrooms, in faculty appointments, in epistemologies, in pedagogies, in insufficient racism, critical literacy, etc. It is a university culture that expresses preference for more of the same, which you have gone out through centuries. And that is what cloning, culture cloning is about. Culture cloning brings us to cloning a certain profile of what you think should be the professor. Think of professor, what is the image that comes along? I'm not going to ask for the image, just think of the image you have. Think of student, what kind of image comes along. If you are in a situation that you say, well, my students are so different, I can't tell you what the student is like, that's a good situation. That means you don't have a profile. That means that if a student comes in class that you're not checking whether that student fits or does not fit the profile you have of a what a student should look like or what a student should behave like. Of course, there are some general things. You want students to study. You want to, them to become self-directed in their learning. You want them to develop the discipline to study. I mean, there are some very generic things. But beyond there, there is nothing that has to say that a student has to be male or that a student has to be a woman only or that preferably white, even when it's not conscious. So it's those type of things that can work in an often unconscious way to attract you or to make you feel more comfortable with one student or the other way around, to, as a professor, to be able to feel comfortable with a range of students. So a different way of looking at university is that university culture is about functional and social relations. Am I going too fast? Okay. It's about values and symbols, about pedagogies, about the relation between student and faculty, about what is perceived as relevant knowledge, how knowledge is created, how the university relates to society, how learning is evaluated, whether learning is individual or collaborative, who defines what knowledge is, about the relation between teaching and research. It is about the quality of the learning environment. I'm still talking about university culture. It's a lot. It is about faculty expertise and what is considered relevant competence, and so on. So when you talk about university as a culture, almost everything is at stake that helps the university function as a university unit. So it is a lot. Now, because every day, remember the whole list I just mentioned, if it operates through culture and everyday practices, transformation can only take place in a sustainable way, and if you transform key values of higher education in culture and practice. So one needs to address the key values that have to do with what is knowledge, who creates it, the relation between student and professors, and so on. This means that intervention need to happen at the deeper levels of organizational culture to transform core values and norms about learning and knowledge production. Now, in the course of history, education evolved from an arena for the privileged few to a human right for all. And of course, this country has been fundamental in stimulating that transformation. Indeed, in the course of the 20th century, the call for social justice gained momentum in the route towards education for all, regardless of race, gender, economic background. Arguably, social justice has been at the heart of the democratization of higher education. Though promoted as a key value, equality in education is still far from an achieved goal. Moreover, over the past decades, neoliberal policies have contributed to what has been called the corporatization of universities. Adopting neoliberal regimes, higher education has become to imitate corporate productivism. And I don't know how prevalent that is in France, but it is visible in many other countries. It turns universities into cultural clones of business organizations. Among the many features are extreme competition, the translation of learning and research into measurable items that can be made marketable and cashable, accountability regimes, increasing alienation of faculty from identifying with their university. This phenomenon is certainly visible in the US, in the UK, in the Netherlands, in Scandinavian countries, and other parts of Europe. These developments have not gone unnoticed to students. Over the past year, protests for equality in higher education have rocked university campuses in Europe, in the US, in South Africa, and in a number of other countries, where state policies and higher education leadership fail to address sufficiently the interconnected processes that sustain inequality. Today, most, if not all, universities have embraced managerialism and are stuck with a degree of registering and accountability, the so-called new public management, that seems to undermine the quality of life and learning at universities. In my earlier work, I call this process of mimicking business organizations a form of cultural cloning. Is this something you recognize in the French situation as well? Okay. So I'm not talking about some thick cloud that you have no clue. The corporate model means profits, accountability, assessments, and producing has been cloned into the educational sector and in higher education. And think about something. If something is a clone, like assimilation politics wants ethnic minorities to be clones of the dominant white group, A clone is never going to be it. It's never going to be real. Like you have, you know, fake products of Chanel, etc. It's an imitation. It's not the real thing. And so if you create clones, you're always going to lag behind. You're not going to get it. You're not going to function to your potential, because what you are asked is not to develop according to your potential, but to become like that. And that original gets the opportunity to develop to their potential. So in a way, there is so much logic and understanding that it's not really going to work. But that's what we do at universities. Cloning practices means imitating values, traditions, models, or behaviors that work in one societal or organizational or cultural context with the purpose of creating something similar in another context. The academy can be seen as an original, as an organizational culture where scholars are increasingly subjected to regimes of fear, operating through peer reviews and accreditation and assessment procedures. It's a culture in which we have embraced meritocracy as an ideal model. Meritocracy presupposes that merit can be measured. Think about that. Can you measure merit? Measurements means using uniform standards, which are called the process of standardization, on the basis of which comparisons can be made. Standardization comes with pressure to conform to a pre-established one-fits-all criteria. Standardization goes against individuality and diversity. Moreover, it promotes homogeneity based on middle-class, often European-dominated cultural values, while undermining, for many, the dignity of being human. Short-term employment and job insecurity are clones from the factory model. We have that now at our universities. It creates a mentality of dependency and constant pressure to live up to requirements, which may cause stress and can be draining and with chronic tiredness as a result. There is no question that modern education has been beneficial to large groups of people, but there is also another side. Some students commit suicide because they cannot cope with the pressures of fast learning, consuming large quantities of text, and concerns about the euro or dollar signs of the accumulating study debt they have to pay afterwards in many countries. Among faculty, there are signs of dissatisfaction, chronic tiredness, burned out, the sense of becoming a teaching machine, less and less time to reflect, to be creative, and to do what academia was about, a space for intellectual growth. Here I am reminded of the words of one of the most important and brilliant intellectuals of the late 20th century, Edward Said, who said in his book Representations of the Intellectual, he warned against scholars on only engaging in, and I quote him, he wrote this in English, I think. I'm going to translate from French to English, and then, anyway, this was a book I think he wrote first in English. What is considered to be proper professional behavior, not rocking the boat, not straying outside the accepted paradigms or limits, making yourself marketable and above all presentable, hence uncontroversial, unpolitical, and objective, end of quote. Decades of critical theory and research, including women and gender studies, race critical studies, and has taught us that neutrality is a myth, a form of race, gender, class oppression in disguise. These critical ideas of study have always claimed that social justice should be and remain at the center of what makes scholarship meaningful. Now think of what I'm just saying. Would you agree with that, that that is important? Social justice at the center of what makes scholarship meaningful. Now if you look at the missions of universities, are you going to find that? Rarely. I did a random search a couple of years ago because my university where I am has social, economic, and environmental justice as in the mission, and we monitor that you live up to that in terms of research opportunities in terms of curriculum. It's not that you monitor anything, but you want to live up broadly to a mission. So my work is at the center of what we do at our universities and not at the margin, something like, oh, we have this race-critical stuff also, and we need to do that. It is about social justice. So that's just one example where, I mean, it is changing a core value. It's not changing that you want people to, students to develop to the best of their talent and to do excellent research. But what excellent means, that changes. It's not a standardized, objective thing. It's what you think would be useful for the development and sustainability of humanity, of the earth, of sustainable life. Now that is changing a core value. And you can put it in your mission and put it in a drawer and never look at it again, but if you open that drawer often and say, well, isn't that our mission? And don't we have to live up to that? You are changing something in also in the way as faculty and students you relate to the mission of your university if you have something like that in your mission. So let me see. Cultural cloning of market models, was that the former? Because I can't, yeah. Colonial culture of market models into academia marginalizes those who do not fit a standardized image of the professional intellectual. This has gender and ethnic implication. I think by now it is clear to you how the idea of that you have to fit a model, a profile, a pre-established sort of standardized idea is always, always going to create inequalities. Indeed, another dimension of culture cloning is about replicating the same type of social inequalities we have. If you replicate the same, you replicate the kind of social relations. Remember, I said it's about student and faculty. It's also class relations, gender relations, ethnic relations. If those are unequal in society, if those who are at the anchors of creating universities we have through centuries, if you continue to clone that, you're not going to address the inequalities. This means that the market model reinforces old patriarchal forms and racial culture hierarchies and can undermine the gender progress and across race and ethnicity we aspire to. Criteria for rising up in the system of quantitative output presuppose, remember, publish, it doesn't know where. You have fake journals where people publish and then discover, oh, it was a fake journal, it doesn't count. I mean, a whole industry, who benefits from this? Think about that. Criteria for rising up in the system, quantity output presupposes conformity to a certain disposition, including repression of emotion, adherence to a myth of neutrality, no time for care, and other traits often but not exclusively attributed more generously to the embodiment of white masculinity. So what I'm not saying, if you're white male, you're on the wrong side. I'm not saying that. It's the qualities what one attaches to whiteness and to masculinity and what one can imitate as well, or what those who are not attributed those characteristics are pushed and forced to imitate in order to rise within the system. So I could go on and on, but in the sake of time, I'm going to end with just a few examples of what needs to change. I already said it's important that you have a university which has social justice in their mission. If you do not have that in your mission, it becomes more difficult to say, well, we got to live up to that. And how are you living up to that? And the mission needs to reflect pressing societal and global needs, and in particular also the sustainability of human life or of life, period, on this planet. A university that is not a corporation that goes produce, make money, etc., but a learning community. That was it. Was it supposed to do? Where learning is exchanged and where there is intellectual growth and where there are people who have time to reflect and say, well, we need to address these and these problems in society, or this is the prognosis of where we can go. You need time to be able to reflect on that. A university where there is less competition. I'm going back to this hierarchies of worth. Hierarchies of worth are based on the idea of comparison. As soon as you compare yourself with somebody next to you, it means that you are going to be in the kind of societies we live, which are competitive. You want to be there and not under that person. And some want to be equal, but what is equal? Look to the person sitting next to you. Regardless of how that person looks, like you, not like you, you are not the same. There are no two people exactly the same, not even twins, because of the way you process experiences in life. So in a way, it's a myth. And if we continue to compare all the time, you continue to create hierarchies. So it's not about competition. It's about connectedness and collaboration, which is a key value that needs to be changed. Not the measure of not publications, the number of publications as a measure of individual or university success, but the usefulness of knowledge, the achievement for community, for the world, for a community beyond your own, for humanity as a whole. Those are different criteria. I'm not saying make those the exclusive ones, but those need to be included in what is seen as relevant to teach and to research about. Not the homogenization through heterogeneity, but bring to the fore the individuality of each student. I'm not talking about individualism, which is something else. But individuality means the uniqueness of the combination of talents, what each person has to offer. And of course, there are some things that you say, we want this for all students. But be very careful what you make, this is what you want for all students. How inclusive is that? And where is the space for the very uniqueness for each and every student? And finally, this is a way, a joke, but it is not a joke. Less peer review, but more peer learning and peer collaboration. Thank you.
Donc, merci beaucoup, Madame Esset, pour votre conférence. Thanks a lot, Professor, for your acute words. Et maintenant, on va passer à un tour de questions-réponses, 10 minutes, qui sera guidé par Anna, qui va être traductrice de vos questions. Donc, il y aura deux personnes qui vont être dans les déplacements des micros pour vous apporter le soutien.
Merci. Jean-Pierre Raoult, Commission nationale consultative des droits de l'homme. I had the feeling, hearing your talk, that you are rather pessimistic about the evolution nowadays about what you were talking about, especially about the importance of measurements and criteria of excellency. You say something like measurement is creating uniform models. And you also talk of this increasing pressure for criteria of excellency. And we have very good examples here in France, in many topics, and especially in the universities. There is an increasing pressure towards university to create measure and apply measurements on everything, on the capacities of students, on the capacities of laboratories with references to universal standards like the Shanghai's one. So I would like to know whether you share this feeling of pessimism that I retired from your talk.
I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist, and the changes that I ended with are all key values of my own university, which means change is possible. And I don't see critique as the same as pessimism, because what I offered was a critique of the way the university functions. And what I'm saying, if we continue in that direction and do not try to intervene, and it's up to each university, each people, I would say this is what you need to do, and you have to do that strategy, and that's for people to take responsibility. You can only do for what you can bear the consequences. So critique is not for me the same as pessimism. But I can understand the feeling of pessimism when one feels powerless against regimes in university that continue to push almost like clock in when you arrive at your desk and clock out when you leave, and continue to push teachers and faculty to function as factory workers. And I'm not saying that a factory workers is of a lower sort of people. Absolutely not. It's the kind of work that is so undervalued that the working conditions can be terrible. And universities have been an elite had the privilege almost of working in more self-directed ways for many centuries or decades, and now it's moving towards the factory model. So where one would hope and expect the other way around, improve factory work or manual work in a way that is more appreciating of what we take for granted in everyday life, in functioning, eating, taking the transport, etc. It should move in the direction of look at other professions where there has been a better learning environment, but it moves the other way around. And so I can, if one sits and feels powerless, that creates pessimism. If one sits and think, well, maybe there are ways of addressing this, now if I can identify the problem, that is a step towards being able to create measures, but ways of change. So I don't feel pessimistic, but I can imagine that a critique, given the circumstances where most faculty are in, can be felt as pessimistic.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. My name is Monsieur Aguenif. I'm one of those racialized academics in the French Academia, and I thank you very much for picturing very accurately the situation that we are going through in France. Actually, I would add to that we are in the ascending path to this. We haven't reached the peak of what you just described. Mm-hmm. So I guess that it might worsen a long time, especially because the budgets for the public universities in France are worsening. And but I wanted to point out something that you mentioned at the beginning with the endless list of how racism is happening in ordinary lives across university, and point to the fact that the main issue that we're facing in France, because it's a universalist, colorblind republic, is the fact that the standard you described about the white male is something that you have a very hard time making accurate and raising the awareness of the white male, mm-hmm. so that you can make the point about how racism is unfolding. So do you have any clue or any way that you can bring the standard, mm-hmm. to realize that they are the standard according to which everybody else is being judged and ranked and hierarchized? Mm-hmm. So I think this is a very specific issue, because in each country, in each culture, in each ethnicity, because there is an ethnicity in France also, we have a hard time trying to realize that, there is a way to address that. So what is the way you would suggest that we can think of? And my other question is about coalitions, because as you said, you cannot transform the situation you're in if you're in a hostile environment, which is the case most of the time. So what kind of coalitions can be built, not just nationally, but also transnationally, and in all kind of trans ways, so that there is a powerful way of addressing and confronting the situation of racism at the university
okay,
level?
Okay, those are two big questions. Let me start with the first. One thing I try not to do, but I'm maybe not always successful in that, not to speak about the white male per se, but what is attributed to, and what white males are expected to live up to, which is ideas about a certain masculinity, ideas about ways of being white. So it is about whiteness, and it is about as a phenomenon, and about masculinity as a phenomenon. Because I don't, otherwise you target people, and I don't think targeting people is a way to go forward. Because as racialized students or faculty, you're targeted already as a person. So the way forward is to question and to change key values and norms and ways of being, for instance, to detach from emotion or to prioritize work above any other relation, or not to understand that the reason why we can sit here and be at this conference is that thousands of people have been working to make those chairs, to create that, to make this, who have been working under very challenging and often very unfair conditions, that the idea of being forced to have value only if your peers value you is also a stronger put on male on as a way of masculinity, becoming a man or becoming showing your masculinity, than women. I mean, the old idea, the outside man and the women who stays more inside, it is almost a caricature, but it's not quite. So the idea that you have to live up to peers, that is group formation and forcing a homogeneity, which is a false homogeneity, because it denies the ability of any person, including white males, to be a unique person, rather than to live up to what is expected. So that is why I say you cannot remove racism from a larger system. And if that system is about pushing towards standardization and towards homogeneities, and not recognizing that there is never not two people, and let alone a group who is homogeneous. One can share certain things, but you also share across cultures, across genders. It's way more complex. And that is the direction one wants to, at least I go in my work, which is where the idea, the critique of culture cloning comes from, is to show that on the surface you think, what does this have to do with race? Weren't you invited here to talk about racism? And I say, well, wait a minute. It is embedded in a larger system of thinking and cultures and values. If you don't address that, there is a low ceiling for addressing racism, because you will bump your head against the ceiling of all the other values. And that is a conversation that everybody can take in. And the more you are able to recognize that no group is completely homogeneous, and it is a disservice to the individuality of people to be pushed in a homogeneity of, or expected, the more it frees, it unfreezes everybody to be their own person. The second thing with collaboration draws from this: the more you can show that the way society functions goes across different forms of domination, different forms of marginalization, that a struggle against racism cannot be isolated from gender issues, from disability issues, from sexual orientation, from arguably religion is not on its own, it has been racialized. So you cannot exclude it from that. You have to see the interconnections, and that is how you build coalitions. So, and so of course one starts with, as one does now, as in this conference, with organizing around racism. But if you exclude that as the only factor, it will have a low ceiling. At least that is my experience. But I cannot tell you how to do that. I'm only saying, well, given my experiences that goes back even before the 80s in these areas, that's what I have seen as not really working very well.
Thank you very much, Professor. Et malheureusement, on n'a plus le temps des questions. Donc, remercions la professeure Essay. Thanks a lot.